I can hear you in the air.
By all means, carry on the gap.
So good.
Welcome to the Community Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee. We start at 6:30 and it is 6:30. So just a few simple housekeeping rules. I don't think we're expecting any fire alarm tests this evening. If you have any mobile phones with you, could you please put them on silent? And if you want to speak, please would you raise your hand and either myself or Andrew will spot you immediately and come to you. And I think that's it. I think that's it for housekeeping. Okay, so if we begin, can we note the minutes of the 2nd of March 2021 as published in the digest number 274 on the 5th of March 2021?
Yes.
Thank you. Andrew, do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chair, we have apologies from Councillor Ray Barron, Louise Nixon, who substituted by Councillor Loughran this evening, and from Tony Pearce.
Thank you. We don't have any public question time.
That's nil.
We don't have any council session.
That's nil.
And members' items number 5, item number 5A, the Health and Care Overview and Scrutiny Committee. Councillor Mrs. Jay Hood, on pages 4 to 15. Can we note that, or has anyone got anything that they would like to speak on? Okay, yes, Anne.
Okay, just because, it's disappointing to see that the corporate bodies are going to be on the integrated care system boards and involved in this decision making. It's also very disappointing to see that the government is planning to remove the statutory obligation.
The statutory obligation of the government to provide healthcare once this comes in. If anybody wants to check that, they can read Professor Alison Pollock. She's a professor of public health.
Thank you,
Jen. The on Appendix 1. Page 1, the journey towards the integrated care scheme.
Can you put your microphone on, please?
You just put it near your head.
Hello, right, okay. Right, this is the, on page 1, the journey towards an integrated care scheme. On the second part, it's the following page. The question I've got is how will they ensure that the focus on the healthcare needs of Stafford will be given? Because it talks about the six, the integration of the commissioning groups, the joining of the six areas, clinical commissioning groups joining, but how will we focus on the health needs of Stafford? That's the first thing. The next question I've got is to do with care homes for the older people. What risk mitigations are they putting in place to ensure that care homes, because they are at risk of COVID, what mitigation are we putting in place to ensure that we can give them some support? And I think the last, that's the next one.
Jeremy, would you like to take those questions?
No, not particularly. Would you like to? Given there are two committee members who are nominated representatives on this committee at county, it would seem more fair if they answered those questions, because it ensures they're paying attention and staying awake. But I will, on this occasion, let you do that. Because obviously, it's not a re-scrutiny of a scrutiny. We've already been through the scrutiny, and we've just got to be very careful. But I think they're sort of worthwhile questions given the size of the agenda. So if I pick up the first piece about the integrated care systems, I think there is a wider recollection, and I am sorry, I haven't read the person you referenced, so I don't understand the point, I don't understand the question, or the point that you're making. It's a short article, that's fine, just get off things. But the point of the integrated care systems is there is a wider recognition of the success of in dealing in the pandemic of partnership working.
Yeah.
Rather than just looking at narrow bodies and the NHS as the front door to hospitals. And actually there's a lot more that can be done in advance of people arriving at the hospital to actually prolong their lives and increase the quality of their lives. So the point of integration is to try and resolve some of the problems. Best example is, we used to talk about discharge to assess, which was, you're medically fit to leave hospital, but there is nowhere for you to go to. And some of that would have been a social care issue, and some of that might have been an adaptation of your home issue, i.e., you can't go home because you're going to be on your own, and there aren't the adaptations, or there isn't the care support coming in. There was always about, just let me get the number right, I think about 175 people who were medically fit within the system, within the hospital system, who could have gone home, but they didn't have the right support. And through working with the county council and social care and making the discharge a lot quicker, actually that number fell to about in the small 50s, something like that. And that created more capacity within the system, which meant the system wasn't overrun. And there are lots and lots of those sorts of examples about integration. But it does roll back the Lansley the Lansley changes from 2012, which made more of a commercial market of the NHS. So this is rolling that back. This is more about how do we use the Staffordshire pound we've got to best advantage. So there's a couple of follow-on bits. The first one is to enable the creation of the integrated care system, the existing commissioners needed to merge. And those existing commissioners were the six clinical commissioning groups, the CCGs. They commissioned on behalf of the GPs, the 147 GPs in Staffordshire. So the 147 GPs in Staffordshire had to vote in favour of merging the CCGs. Now, in fairness, the CCGs have met in common as one, 99% as one. For the last couple of years, they share the same executive teams. So on that basis, actually, the issue was more about how do you build another layer within that and to make sure there isn't a divergence of views. Best example of divergence of views, North Staff CCG, didn't have hearing aids available for people with mild and moderate hearing loss, and that's something that the committee with Jill and Anne managed to reverse last year, so that there was given. So there is a move towards merger, remove duplication, remove back office, and that's where the integrated care system is going towards. There will be a greater focus on well-being as well as fixing you when you're broken. So if we can do more up front, that is a better view. And the best example of that is probably Marmot and his view in terms of healthy life expectancy. So the rest of us talk about life expectancy, and what we should really talk about is healthy life expectancy, because life expectancy is probably, you can look up the figures what they actually are, but it's somewhere like 79 for a man and 83 for a woman as life expectancy. But healthy life expectancy is probably 67 for a man and 70 for a woman. And what's elongating is life expectancy, not healthy life expectancy. So we live longer in needing greater support in worse conditions. So in terms of how do you generate the clinical commissioning priorities, which is the question you asked, Councillor, the answer to that question is something called population health management, which is about using the data that we have to identify those areas to focus in on to make sure we have the greatest bang for the buck across Staffordshire.
and that means, and so, you know, we all have, for example, JSNIs, and someone's just going to help me on the definition of a JSNI, joint strategic need. Thank you. So we all have those, and I got timed out. And off the back of that, there will be local indicators, like, you know, indicators of deprivation. So if you listen to the vaccination leads, one of the things that they saw, there was a greater predominance of illness, long COVID and death during the last 18 months of the pandemic, with areas of deprivation. And it's about how do we stop some of that, and how do we stop talking about that, and make cogent actions that make a real difference to our population. You can only just see by the change in obesity that words are not sufficient. You know, because we have made precious little difference in all the bits we've done in the last few years on obesity, and we need to you know, we need to stop the things that balloon out into being the next thing that actually eats up all the money within the system. Did I answer all the questions? And I'm sure that the chair or Councillor Edgeworth would have said that more eloquently, so apologies for that.
Thank you.
Possibly put it in better words.
Thank you, Councillor Pert. So are we okay to note the report and move on now?
If you can answer the question on the care homes and the risk mitigation, are there any risk mitigations in place to ensure that we don't lose too many?
I know that there was
quite a healthy discussion about the care home staff, making sure that the care home staff were vaccinated, and that went on for quite a long time.
Thank you. It is worth just mentioning that through the two very good councillors you have on the committee, because we have always had a county councillor on your committee, in this case Councillor Edgeworth, and a district or borough councillor on our committee, you know, as a deliberate joint way of working. And if there are non-district only, i.e. non-Stafford borough issues, wider issues, then, you know, there is no reason why those committee members shouldn't bring that and add that to our work programme if there is a wider view on it. If it only affects Stafford, then, you know, that should be discussed here and addressed here. But my point is, care homes is on the agenda for review. We felt that it was better to review it a bit later in the cycle, because, you know, we're still coming through a third wave, and we haven't yet seen what the final fallout will be from the care home market. There is a real recognition that the market is very fragile, and the County Council, as a significant commissioner of care home services, alongside the CCGs who also commission care home services, you know, both of those are big players in the market. We may need to go and look at how we intervene in the market by building or doing something different because of the fragility of the whole system. But we haven't yet seen what the impact of COVID will be. So, for example, you know, is the reduction in numbers in care homes a long-term trend, and people now want to go forwards and spend much, much more of their time at home, irrespective of the impact on care support, i.e. will that be home support rather than care home support? I don't think we know that yet, but it is something very much alive and something that we are aware of. And I think it's on the agenda for December or January, I think.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
can
you.
I just
yes,
one?
You can.
And I was on Appendix 2. It's under the work programme planning. On page 2, overview, matters highlighted for inclusion. And it talks about maternity services, George Bryant Centre, etc., etc. There's no mention of hearing disabilities or autism or indeed dementia. And if you look at the age profile of Stafford, the age profile is absolutely ripe for dementia escalation. So I wondered if there's that needs including in that first paragraph on the
Yes.
On the page.
Okay.
The page.
Thank you, I'm sure we can include that.
I'm sorry, I haven't got any page numbers.
No. All right.
Thank you, Ray. Councillor Loughlin.
Thank you, Chair. This one is very careful. It's £40 for the senior report here. And they did, in fact, make reference to comments from district councillors, for example, from Stafford Borough Council, and presumably from further afield, from Litchfield, etc., and about their making comments. That's all very well. The three councillors here who have contributed to tonight's discussion, you have all been present at these meetings. We're looking at reports from the 16th of March, the 7th of June, the 5th of July, and you yourself, Chair, actually said that got a good airing, i.e. the care homes report. Does that then mean that we as district councillors are not really privileged to make comments about what's going on at council? And if so, perhaps you could tell us, how do our district councillors have an input into the county health scrutiny? Because I don't know, you know, if you're saying you've discussed this practically ad nauseam, so there's no point in this raising it out because you're not going back to tell them you've already discussed it. How do we, you know, our representatives here are they're dual-hatted, aren't you? And there is no one going from Stafford Borough Council who is, can I say, simply a borough councillor? You know, do other councils have councillors at those meetings who can contribute and put forward the points of view of their district councillors,
yes,
as opposed to you three? Why is this going funny all the time? You keep shuffling.
Well,
Mr. Wilson's have been you, sorry about that, Chair.
Thank you, Angela. I'm going to take you first and then Jeremy.
Well, thank you. Councillor Walker, just to answer your question, actually. Any concerns that's raised at this committee and any issues that you feel that should go to county, then please pass them through the chair and we will take them up with county, you know, county level. So any things that you feel are prevalent to Stafford Borough or within Stafford and you feel that you need to take it to the Health Select Committee at County, then please raise it. There's no hidden agenda or anything. You know, we're quite happy to discuss anything. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd like to add, Angela, that we do have the luxury of a panel of experts from a number of the various organisations which we can aim the questions at, and if they can't answer the questions immediately, then they email us and we can put forward questions, so if there is anything we can do it that way as well. Jeremy.
Thank you, Chair. Just to back up a couple of things, all of the meetings are live webcast. And so you can certainly watch those, they are a riveting watch. We also record them and keep them on the County Council's website for a period of 12 months. And you know, the 3 hours are just floats by a second, and I'm sure you really enjoy those meetings. And I think the point about specialists being there, I think, is exactly right, and that's why the meetings are interesting, because you know there is an opportunity to dig through into the detail. Second of all, the work plan is produced with, there's a 12-month work plan there now, so if you felt there was things that you wanted to contribute to, then you can always look at the work plan, contribute through the chair, because that's the reason why they're on that committee. I would also say that local concerns, the county scrutiny role is to look at county-wide issues or issues that affect more than one district. There is absolutely no reason why this committee here could not pick up something that looks at just a district issue from a health perspective. So if you wanted to look at well-being within Stafford, providing it wasn't a duplication of what is done by the senior committee, which is the county committee, because we have the statutory power, not you, then I would welcome that. And actually, I think districts and boroughs should be doing that. So Cannock, for example, mm-hmm. have been looking at the temporary closure of the Cannock Minor Injuries Unit. and have been giving that a big beating. And there is no reason why this committee here cannot be asking those health and wellbeing questions, providing it doesn't cut across what the county is doing. Because what we can't afford is for senior professionals within the health service to end up at 8 places. It doesn't help for coordination and the best use of their time. But I have to say, if anyone's attended any of the webinars that we put on from a vaccination point of view, you know, we are getting the county needs at all of our meetings on these sorts of issues. It's really important because we get the right level of input, we can raise those concerns. And there is no suggestion from anything on the county to exclude people from that. And as I say, I would welcome you doing stuff at the local level as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. I will add as well, Councillor Loughlin, that I'm of a mind, I think, as of most of the councillors, that we know our patch, we know our people. So I'm sure it would be very much appreciated if you put forward questions. Today I've had the luxury of asking, and hopefully it's going to be a yes, that we can set up vaccination points for Stone, because we were discussing how young people aren't going to come forward because the age group, indicative of the age group, they just can't be bothered. So if it's on their doorstep, you know, that kind of thing can go ahead. Andrew's also asked me to point out a detail that it was the Healthy Staffordshire Committee for the first couple of meetings, but it's now being renamed the Health and Care Overview and Scrutiny Committee. For reasons I have no idea, but there we go. It's a very posh title.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chairman. I just want to say, actually, I think a message coming from County, actually, is that what I'm picking up, and I'm sure we all are, that we have got to work closer together with the boroughs. You know, the 8 districts we've got, you know, we've really got to work closely together, because health and wellbeing is very, well, we all know, very important. So I'm sure that, you know, there is work that we can do together. Thank you.
Jeremy.
So the answer to the name point is that I think there has been a recognition there was not as much scrutiny of the social care side of health. And it plays a vital role, and if we're not careful, you just scrutinise institutions or buildings, and actually, you know, if we're just going to spend our time when people enter the system at the front door of a hospital, I think we're missing all the other bits, you know, that might have elongated the time till they got to the front door of that hospital. So that's why the care is important. An overview and scrutiny perform two different things. Scrutiny is looking generally backwards, and overview is looking into the horizon. And we haven't done enough horizon scanning, in my view. You know, why are we not challenging the system to put in, you know, adaptive technologies and other things that are out there, and bringing other things to the table? And that is part of the overview side.
Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, so finished on that section.
I just wanted to ask about, I think at one of our health scrutiny committees, I mentioned that we could do a newsletter for people that are isolated and lonely. And it was suggested that your department might take it up. I've been busy. Obviously, extremely busy. But I was thinking more in terms of, you know, for people that you can email. There must be a majority of people that you can email some sort of the contact numbers for us, for, you know, what services are around, how to contact streets, things like that type of thing.
Through you, Chair, so can I get in touch with you tomorrow?
Yeah,
if that's okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay, so we're moving on now to page 16, and Tracy's report. Would you like to take it, please, Tracy?
Thank you, Chair.
Just talking to it.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair. So this is the report for community recovery, and it's looking back at quarter four. So if I could bring the committee's attention to paragraph 5.3, where we focus on the amount of support that's been provided to clinically extremely vulnerable residents during the quarter four. So we've had approximately 210 referrals that have been on the list, and my officers have been making regular fortnightly calls to approximately 60 people just to see what help and support that they need, and to offer a listening ear. Out of that 60, we've also managed to make 30 referrals into the Staying Well service, which is run by the Midlands Partnership NHS Foundation Trust, and that's been really, really positive. And that service provides a preventative service to individuals who have been identified as having moderate frailty. And we've had some really good feedback from that. So the work on response for community recovery, it does continue, because we are still in the response phase. And that about sums up the report, Chair, so I'm happy to take questions.
Tracy, I wonder if I could ask the long-term view of these people that we've been helping, what do you envisage going forward will we be able to do?
So my team are still making contacts with a very small cohort of people still, and the residents who are receiving those calls are more than happy to receive them. We've managed to signpost and refer a few residents into existing services, and there's some new services such as befriending services that have set up that we've also managed to signpost people to. I think the 60 people, it's predominantly around sort of reassurance that they're going to be okay. Because I think throughout the pandemic we've seen, especially mature, you know, people who are elderly, who have lost their confidence because they've been shielding for such a long time, and you know they are quite anxious about going out, doing shopping, you know, just normal day-to-day activities that we all used to do pre-COVID. And my team have just been providing that reassurance that, you know, they are going to get food, they are going to be fed, and, you know, it is going to be okay. And if they don't feel okay, then we have somewhere to signpost them to help them.
I noticed in the beginning, gosh, it's almost 2 years, isn't it, now that we've been doing this, and I'm still volunteering. I noticed that when I would go into people, they did everything. They cut their own hair, they did their washing, they cut the grass. No, they didn't. They didn't do any of it. And now, because we've built up such a rapport with these people, they're not afraid or ashamed to say, yes, actually, I do need some help. And I would like to see that continue. But of course, volunteers are dropping off so drastically now, it's good to know that the Borough Council is still maintaining that help.
Yeah, through you, Chair. So we are working very closely with Support Staffordshire and Anne Ross, who is our locality officer for the district. She's working with trying to build up a volunteer base, trying to encourage some of the groups who feel that they don't have the capacity to carry on, to try and help them carry on and try and build some capacity in the community. And I think, you know, for me, one of the real positives out of all of it is, as you just mentioned, that people aren't as afraid now to ask for help and support, which, you know, it's a real positive.
And it's quite frightening for them, isn't it? At the beginning, when they thought they were going to be taken out of their homes, and now they realise that what we want is for them to stay in their own homes, which is good.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Tracy. Does Angela?
I could just call me, please, and say that I would like to congratulate the staff at the Borough Council who have, in actual fact, still been keeping in touch with all these people who are considered to be vulnerable. And one of the questions I had wanted to ask Tracy then, who are this support group? Who's making up? You talked about Support Staffordshire, and you also talked about your own team of staff. As I say, I'm really delighted, and please pass on my thanks to them, and I think also the thanks from the community themselves, because a lot of these people do appreciate what's being done for them. So you mentioned Support Staffordshire. who else are in that support group that you have, the community support group?
So through you, Chair, so we work with Support Staffordshire and a broad range of community and voluntary sector organisations all over the world. So we've been working very, very closely with Rising Brook Baptist Church, with Stone Community Hub, with Aldershaw Cares, with Elan Hope, Asich Neighbourhood Scheme. There's a broad range of organisations, and we've been able to have a really, really good network throughout the borough because Support Staffordshire have helped facilitate that.
That's great. Thank you very much, Tracy, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I hope you forgive me for saying this, and it's in no way a criticism. It seems to be that we contact all of the organisations who have paid members of staff, whereas the likes of Stone Helpline, who started off with 304 volunteers, are being completely cut out, which I think is a real shame. But hey, it's still going, it's absolutely active, and we're doing a fantastic job. We don't mind being left out. I echo that, Chair. You are doing a marvellous job. We've linked in quite strongly with the helpline, and really grateful for the support that they've provided.
Thank you,
Tracy. Okay, any more questions? Okay, Mark?
Yeah. Just very, very quickly on that point. At what point do you stop contacting groups? Because I've got groups all across my ward that have been fantastic. And as we start to come out of the pandemic, which hopefully we are doing, although I'm not sure, all of those groups have been doing a fantastic job. So it's where you stop, really. And also, do you do it for the adulation, or do you do it because you want to do it?
Well, I'll answer that. I don't think I've ever had any adulation. People often say to me, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? We've got residents, we were elected as councillors. I feel we have a duty to do that. You know, if we're not going to do it, then it's a sad state of affairs, and I think it's great that the borough are continuing. And I think the lovely thing is the friendships, the bonds that have been formed through these groups that will go on forever and ever. And, you know, and I think if COVID could have a silver lining, which I just don't think it does, then maybe this is the silver lining. Thank you, Mark.
I think we've also, thank you, Chair, I think we've also got to remember as well, there's still many people out there that we're not even touching the surface with. I mean, I visited a lady of 97 the other day, and I didn't really, and she was complaining, she complained because the brown bin hadn't been emptied. And she said, I'm sure I've paid for it and that. And I came away, actually, to be honest with you, in a few tears, because I'm thinking, here I've got a lady that I didn't realise that she was on her own, got no family, she's 97, and she had to struggle to open the door to me, and it really, really got to me. So the reason we do it, really, Mark, is because we care. We really do care.
Thank you. Okay, are we all right now to move on to...
Can I just come back on
that
one?
Yes, of course you can.
I think people like myself, and I know Ray's done a lot, we don't make a fuss about it, we just get on with it. So I agree entirely. I mean, I've been doing helping at the vaccine centres, but I was just making the point that the Borough Council can only contact so many of these groups. That was my point. It wasn't a criticism of anyone.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, are we all right to move on to page 19 now, Tracy? Thank you, Chair. So, through you, Chair, this is quarter four's performance. Unfortunately, the way that the committees are timed, it means that you are looking back at quarter four now. But as I say, it's on reflection, it's the same kind of story and message that we've been given throughout the year, that, you know, the services in the Borough Council are extremely busy and continue to be extremely busy providing response to the COVID pandemic. You know, in particular, officers in our operations service who've been heavily involved in test and trace, and housing team who have been
you know, focusing on rough sleeping and those at risk of rough homelessness, providing crisis interventions. It's just, it has been very, very busy. But if I could just draw the committee's attention to performance at a glance from page 22. There are, I think it's three indicators that have improvement reports. I don't sort of like want to dwell on those because I think that, you know, it's a good news story with the amount of work that we've been able to deliver over the past 12 months and in particular the past quarter. So we have performance indicators, the improvement report, there's some annual indicators that we collect in terms of community safety, green flag and community awards, which are on page 24, and then the narrative updates commence from page 25. So again, happy to take questions supported by the officers who are in attendance.
So if we want to ask Tracy a general question, or if we're going to take it page by page. Angela, did you have a question?
I did want to actually speak, but it's a variety. Can I first of all say that I think the print on page 22 and 23, can I ask those of you who are actually looking at the printed version, how many of you read those two pages?
Because I think the print is appalling.
I can't read it.
It's not even covering the whole page.
I did need some binoculars for page 22.
And page 22. Yes. Sorry. But how many of you are honest enough to see some text? Read those two pages.
Yeah.
I found it absolutely
You just got to get used to.
Well, you know, I just feel this is not very fair. You know, even if you're sitting with your laptop, you're probably getting what. Can you do it on one of them? I mean, I was doing it on my iPad, it was driving me bananas. And I thought to myself, how many people going to committee spend as much time as I do reading all these pages? As I said, I'd like to see, I'm just noticing here that their phone didn't even turn up tonight, but they didn't read them. But I think, you know, there's something ought to be done about it, and I can't even see any smiley faces on it.
So, can Mark wants to speak, but after Mark's spoken, can we take them page by page?
Okay, that's fine.
I have some extremely strong magnifying glasses, which I can see. Mark?
I'm part of the way until page 22.
Okay, so page 22.
Oh, I have, sorry. I can't read 23.
Am I only my glasses?
No, I don't need glasses, excuse me.
It's 22 and 23, and I can read it. That's what Angela was saying, but luckily on the iPad you can just expand it. Now, there's two L16, L17. Which are, which are about homeless cases, closed through prevention and through relief. And then it goes on to the next page, L11 and L16, 16 and 17 on the next page. It's really just a question is, it's been strange times, it's been horrible for everyone, whether you're homeless or not homeless, it's been an awful time. Where are we now? Obviously, this is quarter four. As we're starting to sort of ease up, I see the two people are ready to do. Could you just sort of tell us as a committee, because it is obviously important.
Yeah, absolutely. We are still having it the way that it stands as quarter four here. So more of a focus on crisis and prevention. What we're forecasting as the year goes on is that it will start to shift the balance as the eviction ban is being lifted now. We'll start to get the notices through where we can start to prevent. But but we're not waiting for that to happen at the moment. We're working really closely with staff and rural at the moment to identify those tenants in arrears so that we can start working with them at the moment and ensure that they don't get evicted. We're also doing a lot of publicity to ensure that the private rented landlords and tenants are aware of the services we provide. So we are doing everything we can to try and do that prevention in advance of people contacting us. But I think the way that government has focused the right resources at trying to ensure there are no rough sleepers and to try and ensure that everybody's got a roof for the night has focused us naturally towards crisis. That still continues, but we're trying to balance that now with the more longer term prevention as well. I think as the year progresses, we'll hopefully see the balance start to change.
I find it really interesting and incredibly clever, I'm sure it's because you're a cabinet member, but to be thinking about prevention rather than crisis management with homeless people in support in social landlords. The reason I say that is that most of them have got a problem paying, and I appreciate that. But if we had to rehome them and deal with it, but the amount it would cost presumably per family would be massive. Everything comes down to money, sadly. But I'm really pleased to hear that you've got a prevention agenda going forward. And again, I've had some dealings with the Stafford Rural and the new. Well, it's actually three different organisations, I was told. How are you finding working with the new organisations? Because I understand that we had some gold plated with before, but now in everyday, perhaps it's probably the best way to describe it.
Okay, if I start with the point raised about prevention, our homelessness and rough sleep strategy is very much focused on prevention. That is our prime objective as a service, is to prevent people being homeless, not just the financial costs that you raise, because it is very expensive when somebody is homeless to then rehouse, but also for the other costs as well, around obviously mental health, the family disruption, interrupted things like education, support networks, everything like that. If we can prevent as soon as possible, that is very much where our focus is. With regard to the changing landlord, yes, clearly there has been quite a lot of change over the last year, but we're working really closely with them and have done throughout the pandemic. We have had a change of personnel, but the teams work very, very closely together. So our housing options team are actually doing joint work and joint training with the allocations team at Stafford Rural to ensure that we can really focus on those most at need and who can work with us over the longer term to ensure that their homelessness is prevented. We also work really closely with them on the allocation of property as well to ensure that people are supported when they go into a tenancy and have the best possible chance of making that a success and being able to retain that tenancy. So I think you can't criticise the joint work that's happening between the teams. It has been challenging because people haven't been in the office, but I think we've looked at new ways to develop that relationship, and I would say that the frontline teams are doing such a good job and the relationship
strong
as ever.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay,
Jeremy, please.
Can I just add a couple of thoughts as well, not taking anything away from what Anna said. There is a huge backlog in the court system, and I think what that tells me, and you know, there's all sorts of issues, whether it's the eviction ban coming off, whether it's people looking for rent-free periods and all sorts of other things. I think we're going to have a problem, an amount of pressure on the council services for the next couple of years. I just don't see that changing fundamentally. And whether that results in street homelessness or not, it still needs intervention and work and work on the prevention side. I do think that the webinar that we did back in December last year on housing to try and help signpost both, councillors to where the support is that's available, as well as voluntary sector groups, is really quite useful, because this was all about trying to get ahead of the bow wave. And if the bow wave doesn't come, that's great.
But I think we have to anticipate what might be there. But if you remember, maybe back to 18 months ago, they thought that unemployment might peak at 10%. Today they're talking about a peak at 7%. You know, and that's because of the interventions that have happened. And I certainly hope that's the case, that there has been enough interventions in the last 18 months, because it's been painful for everybody, that means that the bow wave isn't as high or as heavy as it might be. But what we're trying to do is work up front on that. And one of the great examples, and I've not got the right policy name in my mind, but you know, there's a housing interventions policy, which Anna will tell me what it's called, that went through Cabinet very recently, which was all about trying to make sure that we can try and keep people in the houses, in the homes they've got. And if that means that we've got to clear debt because it's a cheaper way of doing it than making somebody homeless, then that's exactly the right thing that we should be doing. If we've got to put out, you know, a loan to try and do the same, then that's exactly the right thing that we should be doing.
Thank you, Jeremy. Does anyone?
Angela? Yes. I just want to come in while you're on the subject of homelessness. But it really takes in not only the homelessness, but it's the next one of the reports that's coming up is about ASPO. Because in actual fact, we do have problems with people having a difficulty paying their rents. I know that is a very serious problem. It's a hardship for the people involved. But there are serious antisocial behaviour activities going on. And these people are making people's lives hell. That's the only way I can describe it. And I'm afraid that when you're talking about doing all you can to keep people in their homes, I'm wholly supportive of the people who find a financial difficulty. But you talk also about giving support to people who are in home, in their own homes, and in social housing. But I'm very concerned, and I wonder what support is going in there, not only for the people who are exhibiting antisocial behaviour, but the people who are living with it. You know, sometimes we seem to forget, you're talking about support, but I'm afraid that I feel that there's often no support going to the people who are suffering the antisocial behaviour that is going on in their back garden, in the flats above them, and it's been going on for years, and we can't do anything about it. So, you know, I'm happy about the people that are not losing their homes because they have difficulty and they're getting this help with rent. I'm still very concerned about your antisocial behaviour and the effect that that's having on people, because those people are not being evicted either because the courts are all clogged up. But that's my observation, and I want to talk to you about the antisocial behaviour whenever it comes up in one of these pages. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Angela. Tracy, do you want me to address the ASB issue now, Chair? So, Angela, if there are issues about antisocial behaviour that you're aware of, if you could link in with me and my team, because I have an ASB officer in post who is able to investigate those kind of issues. So if I give you her details after the committee.
Thank you. I'm obviously just thinking about the notorious case that we have in Stone, which has been going on now for 8.5 years. And Angela, you wouldn't believe how many resources have been poured into that. And the sad thing is that they are privately owned residential properties, and you know, hands are tied, and from police to officers here, it's just incredible. Jeremy.
Can I just pick up a couple of points, if I may, please? The first one is in terms of ASB. Sometimes it's worth looking further than the ASB, and I don't think the council was suggesting otherwise. But you know, if there is a need for interventions on a non-financial basis, through drug and alcohol support or things like that, then you know that is clearly something with the County Council and something we'd all want to try and work on first and foremost. Secondly, the emergency evictions can still happen. So if somebody is permanently creating antisocial behaviour and it is of a level that is severe, then whilst the general evictions is a long process through the courts because of the backlog in the courts, that's not the same with emergency evictions. Thirdly, I would suggest that, you know, if we're talking about people in, and I'm certainly not stigmatising anyone, I mean, you just talk about private housing, but, you know, there are a number of routes to try and get this raised, whether it's through Tracy's team, whether it's through the police, whether it's through housing associations. You know, the people who are involved all have ways of intervening on ASB, and there is a hub which meets on a regular basis to share information so that there is a join-up. I'm not saying that the world is rosy out there. I'd be completely foolish, but it doesn't seem to want to hear me say that. I'd be completely foolish to say that, but I think the starting point is let's get some of the concerns out on the table so that we can get some of those addressed. I'm not suggesting it's quick and easy by any amount of means, but there are a number of interventions. And the final thing is, I would suggest people look at Staffordshire Police's, I think it was on the Twitter feed yesterday, I did watch something from one of their ACCs within the Staffordshire Police on ASB. Excuse me for all the acronyms.
I'll let you off, Jeremy. Mark?
Yeah, we're on to a different subject. So, I think it's something that I've become really aware of the last couple of months, and I think it's yet another byproduct of COVID, and everyone's been sort of locked up, and those problems which were probably problems before have become exacerbated. There's one case at Doxy, and I'm sure Tracy Steen know about it, and I don't really know which sides, which sometimes I get a text, text message of one person, one of another, and I'm trying to think which one's the aggressor, which one's it not. And I suspect that both sides of the equation have got mental health issues. And that's incredibly complicated. I have it at Notional as well, just with one individual. And these are difficult human problems, and sometimes there just isn't a solution. But kicking them out on the street, I don't know. But mental health issues, is that the right thing to do? I don't know. So I sort of feel for you guys.
Thank you, Mark.
Councillor Cooper.
Yeah, just clarifying what you mean by antisocial behaviour from where the council can intervene. I'm taking, we're talking here in terms of antisocial behaviours between two residences, say. Council often said the flat upstairs, the flat below causing trouble. Does your work actually cover public spaces as well? And sometimes it's debatable what's public space. Is a public space land owned by the county or the borough, or is it accessible private land owned by other institutions where there's trouble and clashes with antisocial behaviour?
Depends on the incident. So we would we classify antisocial behaviour as any kind of action or incident that's causing alarm, hurt, distress to somebody. So my team will, they will receive referrals. It could be we get a substantial amount of neighbour disputes from people. And they're primarily around tolerance. Some of them are very, very complex issues, as Councillor Winton has just alluded to. You know, a lot of the people that we deal with, they have mental health issues. There's hoarding issues. You know, it's very, very complex behaviours. So we have to. Because we have a statutory responsibility, we have to act in accordance with our statute. Sometimes our powers only lead us to go so far, which I know can sometimes be quite frustrating for victims of antisocial behaviour. But as Councillor Hurt has alluded to, we have a weekly multi-agency hub that's in place. So if we're unable to tackle something ourselves, we will work with a broad range of partners to try and get the best outcome we possibly can for that person.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you. Another question leading on, I suppose, from that, people talk about when somebody's causing a particular problem in neighbourhood, the ultimate threat of eviction is where that person or that family goes next. Into another area to cause the same destruction in the same way. It's not tackling the root cause issue, is it, when you do that? So I'm assuming, hopefully correctly, that such evictions are really last resort and you've got to try and work with the people to find out why it behaves like that in the first place.
Anna's best place to answer that.
No, absolutely. It is a real challenge because we recognise that the problems will not stop because of eviction. Part of the Homeless Reduction Act, which is the legislation we work to, requires us not just to look at housing. So when somebody approaches us, we have to understand what all their support needs are and ensure that we have a plan for addressing those wider needs. So that could be drug and alcohol, it could be mental health, it could be physical health, it could be crime related. So we obviously can't solve all that, but we have to work really closely in partnership with all other agencies to be able to tackle that, so that the next housing solution will potentially be sustainable. We also have a tenancy support officer recognising that there are people that we're housing who have additional needs and they need additional support to be able to settle into their property. But absolutely, there are real challenges with this and we can't solve that overnight.
Thank you, Anna.
On page 24, it's mentioned the reported incidents of domestic abuse, and obviously it's up, and it's up, I'm assuming, because families have been isolating and under more pressure for all sorts of reasons because of COVID. But I'm just wondering where you get your figures from. Do they come from Women's Aid, or do they come from the police, or do they come from all the different organisations that work with them?
Through you, Chair, so they come from the police, from Staffordshire Women's Aid, from New Era, and we have seen an increase, but this indicator relates to reported incidents, and through the work that we do in partnerships with agencies like Staffordshire Women's Aid, we want to try and instill confidence in victims who are experiencing domestic abuse to actually report it. Mm-hmm. Because if they report it, then we're able to provide that help and support. Mm-hmm. So, although it's quite bizarre to see a smiley face next to the reported incidents, but it's an absolute positive because we want to see an increase.
Thank you,
Jeremy.
Can I just make a very brief point? Whilst the numbers are up, and actually it wouldn't really matter which indicator, but I think it's the same indicator, in fairness. Because it's showing an upward trend. The actual issue is not just the increase in reported cases, but also the complexity of those cases. And I think that, you know, I talked a minute ago about a long tail that COVID brings. I think that is most definitely true with domestic violence. And, you know, it will be a function of what we've all had to live through for the last 18 months.
Thank you, Jeremy. If I could just pop back to page 22 and congratulate Anna. 50 empty homes brought back into use following officer intervention. Splendid. Thank you, Anna. Okay, can we move on to page 23? Anybody?
Page 24. Yes, thank you. Lack of water.
Lots of water.
Oh, no, I'm fine, thank you, Jeremy. I'll choke to death. Page 25.
Chair, please.
Thank you, Angela.
I was very interested, because this is the bottom of the page, but I'd like to know. We
if you're talking about the provision of the new accessible intake taxi line, that's great. We were held up down there for ages, weren't we? And when I saw that's what the old up was, I thought, well, that's great. But what's interesting is here is where it says this work for the new taxi rank under the South Wales Public Realm and Cycleway project is still ongoing and should hopefully be completed by the end of April 2021. I was just wondering about the cycleway. It's not a wee bit of road out there that's got red tarmac on it, or is it going to be a wonderful Stafford Borough Council cycleway? Or is it part of the county cycleway, or is it a new venture? I just wanted to explain, please. And I know Robert will do that beautifully.
Just talking to it.
Talking to it.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, Councillor Loughran, for you, Chair. The intention was, in the early days, it was going to be South Wales, adaptations of the roadway and a cycleway. But I believe the cycleway part of it actually came out during an amendment. So I don't think the cycleway is actually in. It's a part of the county highways improvement. So rather than ours. So what virtually happened was the county had got some money to improve the highway there. We had got a taxi rank in Clark Street, which wasn't really being used by
the
taxi.
Yeah, I know all that. I just wanted to know what the cycleway was going to do, Robert.
I think it was actually taken out of the project at a later date.
All right, so there's no cycleway. Oh dear, that's a pity. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, this all that I've got. I've asked Jonathan Denbury.
I just wanted to ask about the Enviro crime complaints. I just wondered what they were and whether it included litter.
There's actually a definition for envirocrime. It's got to be at least the size of a black packet. So it isn't just normal sort of crisp packets and things like that. So it's something of the order of a black bag which has been flighted. What we found during the lockdown is a lot of people were actually doing a lot of home improvements and also spent the time they were at home clearing their garages out. And what we found is either they dumped the rubbish themselves or they asked somebody in a white van to go and take the waste away for them, gave them sort of £5-10 to take the waste away. And those people in those white vans just actually dumped it on grass verges. The other area of increase of flight during this period was actually jobbing builders. We would go around, do some work at somebody's house, and then just again, dump the rubbish. And we had some very successful prosecutions from against out-of-town builders, some from Warsaw, Telford, Stoke, who'd actually come into our area, done work for our householders, and dump the rubbish on the way back out.
It's interesting that you say it's got to be one black bag, because I've done some litter picking recently, and I did a section from Newport Road to King Edward School, you know that cut through. Mm-hmm. And we collected, myself and another woman, collected 6 bags of rubbish from that one stretch. Mm-hmm. There's so much litter everywhere.
But again, it's for fly tipping, its definition is as a whole, one black bag.
Yeah.
As regarding the litter, yes, it is a concern. Again, what we found out during lockdown that a lot of people were going out and doing a lot more walking, and instead of sort of taking their litter home, they were just dropping it onto the floor. And then unfortunately, as lockdowns were raised, people suddenly went out to public open spaces, and again it was like being let free, and they just left rubbish around all over the place. But this is really unfortunate that the people have done that, abuse circumstances. But what I would like to say is that we're really thankful for all the volunteers that we've got in the borough, the litter heroes, and we found more groups have actually stepped up during the COVID pandemic to try and keep their areas clean and tidy. We provided them with litter pickers free of charge, lots and lots of groups all over the place. That includes elected members who sort of helped support these groups. They formed these groups, they kept the areas tidy, they've left the bags and students in the then gone and picked them up. So I would like to thank all the volunteers that helped, but then also say I'm really disappointed with the people who dropped the litter in the first place.
Yes, it really has been horrendous. I mean, at the weekend apparently there was a huge amount of litter dropped by Essex Bridge. It looked, did you see the photographs? It looked absolutely terrible. There was all sorts of nappies and food containers and bottles. It was just unbelievable. I mean, just wonder what we can do in terms of prevention.
So what's hopefully what we're going to do is as a part of the restructure that I've carried out within operations, we've actually put more resource towards the enforcement side of things. Unfortunately, due to our response phase coming back in, I've not been able to employ these people in the way that I wish to do so. But hopefully, as we get more to recovery than response, we will be looking to increase the amount of fixed penalty notices we serve, and hopefully that will act as a deterrent to people for dropping litter. Because if we can make an example of one person, then hopefully at least 10 people see that, and it will encourage them not to drop litter themselves.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chair.
Jonathan.
Thank you. There isn't much more I can add to what Robert said, really. As far as the taxi rank's concerned, that is done. Cycling is obviously a key part in keeping people fit and active locally. And I'm aware that the County Council are working on the national cycle strategy or with central government on a scheme that will potentially help us reduce traffic coming into town and encouraging more people to cycle. But as I and others have discussed earlier today, you know, people will want to cycle as well. You can't persuade everybody to jump on a push bike, so that can be difficult. The street scene team were absolutely swamped during the main lockdown period. It was very, very difficult at times. And we also had a lot of complaints that we weren't keeping on top of it, but we were. It was just the sheer volume. You know, you'd go out there on a Friday morning, or street scene would go out on a Monday morning and completely clear an area. The following day, it's back to exactly where it was before. It was very hard to keep on top of. If anybody is aware of any community litter groups as well, or anybody they think have done, you know, gone above and beyond, and all of these groups have, but we do have some community awards coming up as well, so I thought I might just give that a quick plug. I nominated staff for Litter Heroes and Becky Woolridge as well, and I believe they've both won awards in the past, so absolutely. And I think that's it really. I've got a couple of items on here, Julie, if I could just mention those,
yes,
as well.
Absolutely.
It was mentioned at full council about monitoring air quality in the borough. That's something we're very good at as well. I think that annual report comes through to this committee, if I remember right, in November.
Sorry, I didn't know.
Big old one.
Yes, a big animal will work. Blue bag recycling as well. Our that's been really, really successful. We were roughly about 18% contamination, if I remember rightly, with the blue bin glass broken up within the additional cardboard and paper, making the quality of that very, very poor. The bag has helped tackle that. I think we're down to about 8% at the moment, which is really, really good. And although it doesn't show a smiley face, it really is. So that's good news as well. That's it for me for a minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Two things. First of all, the litter issue. Don't you think that this is a national disgrace, really? If you drive around the country, it doesn't matter what part you're in, apart from if you drive up to Scotland, it's usually a lot clearer up there than down in England. It's a national disgrace. The roads are appalling with litter. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I have to say, the litter problem in Sutton seems to be not as bad as it used to be. And in fact, if you compare them with some counties, we're a lot better. But you know, we are very, very fortunate that they have the volunteers that we've got, and I think we're all very grateful. The question that I'd like to ask is the community safety on page 24. These figures are local figures. How do they compare to national figures, Robert? Do you know?
Through you, Chair, we actually compare very, very well, and we're below the national average for the majority of the crime types in the borough.
Right.
Councillor
Cooper. Thanks, Chair. Yes, speaking of the situation with Essex Bridge, it's not my ward, but it's where I live. Just a few yards down the road, and it's just unbelievable. Dirty nappies, you cannot believe it. What was concerning me was the report, and this is where I was talking about antisocial behaviour, was the fact that some residents have tried to say to people, can you take your rubbish home, and they've been virtually threatened. Okay, it's not been good, it's been horrendous down there. So whether that would come under the antisocial behaviour thing, whether the borough would be able to help on that situation. We've got a lot of people kicking off, no surprise, on social media about this, locals, and although again it's not my ward, as a resident, I'm trying to instigate some sort of action group within the village to try and get together, organise a little bit, because rather than just the young volunteers going down there and doing a bit. Robert, would you be the contact if we managed to get a public meeting with people who are interested to, you know, be able to come along and say what results the borough will be able to bring to this?
It wouldn't be me personally, Andy, but I'll get somebody from operations team to come and support to say what we can offer and to make logistical arrangements.
Okay.
Yeah, very quickly, it sounds to me like Essex Bridge would be the perfect place for some covert surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
We have cameras, I know that, and that'd be the great place to sort of just pick people up. But on litter, again, Doxy, Derrington, Orton, Church Eaton, those sort of are all a good 5 miles away from the drive-through McDonald's and the other outlets. And by the time we get to us, that's the time they drift out the window. So what I'd really like to ask, and it's not my idea, it's one that's universal, why can't we make the fast food people put that registration on that piece of litter so that when we come along and pick it up and say, here's the culprit, why can't we do that? You're not telling me technology's not there to do it.
Technology, you write it on the pen.
Yeah. This is a matter that has been picked up by a number of councils, including Stafford, to ask McDonald's, but it's not a legal requirement and there's no legal acts that we can use to actually enforce them to do it. So it would have to be voluntary. So what McDonald's actually do is they have a scheme with their staff where they do actually go out within so many metres circumference of their premises on a regular basis to pick up, and they also do support various voluntary litter picking groups with resources, i.e. they pay for litter pickers and whatever to make it happen. But the answer is, there's no legislation there to enforce them to do it. I'd just like to pick up the point that Councillor Sutherland said, is that Stafford Borough, and you will see from the point of our land audit management systems, is relatively clean compared with other parts of the country. So, you know, if you do go out, it's not as bad as going elsewhere.
Mm.
And if you see the pictures of London after the Euro Cup final and the streets of London afterwards, and certainly weren't paved with gold after the match, and that is what we are dealing with. And I feel sorry at times for the volunteers and the council officers who have to clean up after the
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic song for Ralph McTell.
Along the lines of the Streets of London.
You go mention, I'll sing it.
Excuse me. Also, weren't we doing something about becoming plastic free? Wouldn't that make a...
That's what stopped it.
So I don't think we're actually looking at plastic free ourselves, but I think we could potentially look at it as a part of our climate change agenda.
Yes, through you, Chair, yes, we are looking at plastic free as part of our climate change agenda, but it's reported to a different scrutiny committee.
Thank you, Tracy.
Andy.
Yeah, on the answer to the McDonald's wrapping problem, on my ward, the Wimpy, Milford Common, I know the owner there is trying to solve the technology to get its registrations or identification printed on the packaging. The technology is not there yet, but he's really keen to see it done.
Although you've got a system of potentially put a registration number on a package, you then get the package in the lane. You can say, oh, it's come from this registration. Then you've got to prove who's actually thrown it out. It could be one of four occupants of a vehicle. As I say, it's strewn with legal complications and complexities.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that outside my house, I have two enormous lime trees with very wide trunks. Number 66 gets the 8-ounce pizza box. We're at 76, we get the 10-inch pizza box. And my husband pretends to take the dog out and quite often stands behind the trees waiting his moment just to catch these culprits. But on a more serious note, I just wonder if it would be all right and in agreement with the committee. I watched Street Scene over this last couple of years. No matter what, those lads have been out on the streets, you know, amongst COVID, okay, so they're wearing the mask. What they're cleaning up is just dreadful. We had our toilets opened, we've been fortunate in Stoke, and they had to clean up some pretty gruesome things. The other day, they were trying to help someone by putting a cauldron of flowers out, and the shopkeeper really took offence and tried to hold the Street Scene operative in his van because he said he was stopping people coming to a shop. You know, the things that these lads have to go through, and girls, and they are incredible. And I wonder if, through this committee, if we could just write to Street Scene.
Wonderful.
Just to give our appreciation.
Wonderful.
That's
totally agree with you, Madam Chairman. I think it's a fantastic idea. And only yesterday I made a phone call to Street Scene. Can I have a box of bikes, please? Because I've got some people that want to do some litter picking in the Sutmore area. It's the Brethren, actually. They've offered to do some litter picking. We want to do it on their own. So, you know, arrive a box of bikes at my door for I can give them out to them. It's just fantastic. I think we can't compliment Street Scene enough.
Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you for those comments as well. The team work extremely hard. Some of them have had to isolate. There have been deaths. The stories go on. Each individual person. So it's and yet they still continue. And particularly in this heat at the moment, it's just absolutely crazy. I feel for the guys. I know that the Street Scene team has an internal magazine as well, doesn't it, Robert? Is that only for officers? Can we not write to them?
Unfortunately, at the moment, because of our response to COVID, that is something that's had to go out of the way at the moment. So.
No, I think the writing from this committee to the boys and the one lady, I believe, at the moment, who does an outstanding job as well, would really be appreciated because I think they like to know that they're being appreciated.
Okay, Andy, were you indicating to speak?
Yes,
it was. is it answer the question for Street Scene to be part of the community awards? Do we nominate? Mm-hmm. Or is this like one of those if you work for the
government? I think that would be an excellent idea, and I'm wondering if maybe this committee could put them forward.
I think we ought. Can I propose that this committee nominate Street? was.
No, I'll second that.
Thank you.
Yes, if we can.
Okay, so we've covered page 24 and briefly covered page 25. Would anyone like to comment on page 26?
I would, please. Thank you, Chair. Except, you know, 2.2.2, and I see first of all that there is a mention here that Alberts have introduced a mobile catering facility to the play park area called Little Alberts. Now, I just wonder what if that is taken over from the ice cream van that used to was living from there. And I find it quite concerning and wonder if, you know, was the ice cream van put under pressure to retire and to move on? That's the first thing. And the second thing, you know, okay, it's great the other things Albert's Cafe have been doing. We were concerned that they're spreading out to the edges of the bowling green. I didn't quite think that was part of the remit. I thought, you know, that their sitting area was up round the cafe, not down beside bowling green. That's by the way. Another thing is, you're talking at the very end here, that fees and charges are being developed for the use of the new facilities. And we have designed an expression of interest form for anyone who wishes to hire out of these areas. And I don't know whether that's to hire out. I suppose it's hire out these areas. It's just all in the way you read it, isn't it? But I just wonder what areas Albert Cafe is not hiring out, that we the Borough Council are hiring out. I'd be interested in comments, please.
Robert, would you like to take that?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Obviously, the committee will be aware that as we refurbished Victoria Park, and I'd just like to say at this time, if you haven't visited Victoria Park recently, you will be amazed how great it looks. It really is a really good facility. When we did the refurbishment, as part of that, we actually we advertised a catering contract, which everybody was allowed to obviously tender for, and Coalition, which is the company that owns Albert's Cafe, won that contract, and that contract was for the provision of food and drink across the whole of the park area. So obviously the former person who had the ice cream van on the children's play area had the opportunity to tender for the contract, but obviously wasn't successful in gaining that contract if they did actually apply for it. So obviously Coalition have got the rights, and it's up to them as to whether they provide the facilities directly themselves or subcontract. If they decide to subcontract, obviously they need to come and get permission from the council to do that. So they won the contract, they have obviously the rights to provide food and drink in the area. As regards where they're actually situated, what we wanted to do is make the park as inclusive as possible. And so we've got the strip of green grass where I think we used to have a flower bed. And again, if you go into the park, you'll notice a lot of young families have been using that area to sit down as a formal area rather than the children go in and around the cafe. And because the cafe's had restricted numbers because of COVID, we thought it was only fair that we should work in partnership with the provider of Alberts to allow them to make the most of the business, because the more successful they are in partnership with the council, the more successful we will be. So it gives a wider variety of seating spaces for people to consume, but also supports the business during very difficult COVID business times. Coming to the final point about the fees and charges, I think this is a matter that Councillor Lockyer, you raised during the fees and charges process last year. And the idea was that we've got a lot of open spaces throughout the borough where there's not been a formalised fees and charges structure in place until recently. And as a part of the fees and charges structure, delegation was given to me as the head of operations
to determine the levels of fees and charges in the area. And what we've tried to do is those who have got the ability to pay, pay for those spaces, and hopefully that they will then actually subsidise voluntary and charity groups, and so they either get the facility free of charge or a very substantially reduced amount. Again, that increases the diversity of the use of the park and allows accessibility for all.
Okay, Anne, does that answer your question?
No, I'm not quite sure. You know, mm-hmm. You didn't mention any areas, did you? No, but what areas are you talking about that's going to be hired out?
Right. So the areas which can be hired out are the bandstand and the area, which we call the demonstration area, which is on the opposite side to the bowling green. So we've got the there's an area there. You can also hire out the education centre that's placed in the park as well. So generally it's those three areas.
Okay, Angela.
Right,
right.
I'd just like to say that I use Victoria Park now with a 6-year-old grandson on a regular basis. It's absolutely amazing. It caters for every child's dream. It's just incredible. But I wish I didn't have to come to Stafford. I'm sorry, that old cherry, Westbridge Park. It's time that Westbridge Park had their own play facility. We started this in 2013, and here we are in 2021. It's an absolute disgrace that the people of Stone have to come to Stafford. But the facility is amazing, and it's top notch. It's just perfect.
You don't have to come to Stafford to swim there, do you?
Okay, I'd like to speak on page 27, 2.4.2, which talks about freedom leisure as part of the leisure and cultural partnership project. I'm very disappointed that they're not getting their finger out with Stone, Reed Stone, Stafford and Stone Canoe Club. It's a world-class facility there for canoeists. And we have a young hopeful Olympian, Adam Burgess, who I think competes in 2 days. And it will be absolutely wonderful if there's some kind of tie-up with Freedom Leisure, which is just across the field from the canoe club. So it disappoints me that they're not making more of an effort. I have tried myself, so maybe someone can just give them a nudge. Has anyone got anything else to speak about on page 26 and page 27?
Yes, sorry, I'm in this. It's just there's some things I don't really know about because I don't get out very often to the committees. 2.4.3, I wonder who are the members of the safety advisory group. I just wondered, you know, who are the members and who to report to, because I've never been given a report from a safety advisory group. And the same would actually go for the community wellbeing partnership. I never see any reports going anywhere. I usually try to, although I'm not a member of scrutiny meeting committees, I try to read their agendas periodically, but I never see a report from the safety advisory group. I don't know who they are, I don't know who's on them. And the same goes for the community wellbeing partnership.
Thank you, Angela. Robert?
Well, I can talk about the safety advisory group. I think Tracy will talk about the community wellbeing partnership. The reason why you haven't heard about the safety advisory group probably is that it's an officer group rather than an elected member group. I chair the safety advisory group as the head of operations, and it consists of representatives of all the blue light organisations, treatment standards, director of public health, and planning. So it's all the major agencies without the input into the potential organisation of an event. So if an event organiser says, right, I'll give you an example, the Stafford Half Marathon. So Freedom Leisure will come to us and say, we're going to put this event on. this is our event management plan, this is how we're going to organise the event, these are our risk assessments, this is how we're going to try and make it as safe as possible. They have to come and present their plans to all the organisations. We scrutinise the plans to make sure that they're going to have a safe event. If their plans are in any way showing shortcomings, we will make recommendations for which they would have to then put them right. The safety advisory groups have been meeting on an incredibly regular basis because we've had to have every single event that's been going on in the borough in the last 12 months has had to come to one of these groups to make sure that it is actually COVID safe. And they will continue into the future to make sure that people who are coming to the event are safe. I think Anne has been well involved with the safety advisory group for walking streets, so you know that the advice that we give. So when, as well as being an enforcement body, it's there to help and educate and help organisations support events. And we've done the same for lots of events in the Stone Area.
Yes,
and
Angela, if I can just say that I've had personal experience of this group. Robert heads it, do a huge amount of work to make sure that people are safe. They actually come out, they have a look, and you know, once an event goes ahead, it's given the go ahead, you know that it's already been policed by our officers. Jonathan.
Yeah, we've had a few groups come forward who have initially thought that, you know, it's a stumbling block and why do we have to go through all this process, but it soon becomes pretty apparent that we're not there as an obstacle. The SAG is there to support and make sure that these events are absolutely perfectly safe. I think the Ironman went through the SAG as well on several occasions to make sure that that went smoothly. So it's really, really important work and it works very, very well. And actually, we had some very nice feedback in the end from the Walking Streets in particular, who was really appreciative of the work that Robert and everybody else on the SAG have done to make sure that that event could go ahead. And I think you suggested some time changes as well, which really made a big difference to that event too. So, yeah, they're doing a great job.
Do you want me to pick up the community wellbeing policies?
Yes.
So we have a statutory responsibility to have a partnership that has statutory responsibility for crime and disorder in the borough. Stafford, we call that our community wellbeing partnership, and we have to work by statute in partnership with the police, fire, public health and local authority, county council. So the report that you get at scrutiny in this performance indicator and the Monfranchisation behaviour, we are actually reporting on behalf of the Community Wellbeing Partnership. And they're set up, there's a broader range of partners who sit on that board. So we have Stafford and Rural Homes, the voluntary sector, other partners around the borough, and we have a delivery group that sits underneath it that's responsible for the actual delivery of the initiatives that we've got.
Thank you, Julia.
Okay, so the final page, if we move on to page 29, do we have anyone who'd like to come?
Just wondered if we could have an update on Glover Street.
Thank you, Anna.
So things have moved on considerably since this report was written. Most of the work was done in the first quarter of this financial year. We had final delivery of all the utility blocks in the last month. We've got everything now wired in, sorted. We've had the tarmacking done. We've had the pointing redone. We've got the new electricity supply in. We are just waiting on some water meters to be put in next week, I believe. And we are talking to the prospective tenants to be moving onto the site in the next couple of weeks. So we are as near to complete as possible, and it should all be finished in the next week or so.
That's brilliant, thank you.
Can I ask, is that new tenants? Because I know that there were some vacant pitches there. Are their families still living there while the work has been going on?
Yes.
We have 6 vacant pitches. We have 3 that are still occupied, and they have been living there while the work's been going on. We have worked around them and done minimal disruption, because there are only 3 people who are there at the moment, or sorry, 3 families.
Yes,
absolutely. So we do have a waiting list of people to come onto the site, and we are currently working through that list to ensure that we can smoothly transition them onto the site.
That's good news. That's good. Thank
absolutely.
You.
Jeremy.
Thank you. The waiting list is being determined in line with the Borough Council's policy for allocating housing, which had been through the Cabinet not so long ago. So I'm actually surprised that there was a suggestion that we haven't used our own policy, because we deliberately wanted to make sure the policies aligned with each other.
That suggestion?
Well.
Yeah, who made that suggestion?
I don't know.
Making any suggestion about the allocation policy.
I just wanted to make sure that we were very clear that we used our own policy.
Can I just say that is one thing I did for the chair. I read the allocation policy with interest.
Yes.
I'm delighted that you actually used that policy. Thank you. But I did need it reinforced by them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, the
cabinet.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly on, we come to page 30, which Andrew is now going to take over.
Thank you, Chairman. This is the committee's annual report over the last municipal year, which has been 2 years because of COVID. You can see the committee has a wide variety of issues outlined in paragraph 5.2 on page 31, and a number of members' items being put to the committee that are listed in paragraph 5.3. So, committee agree this report will go to the council in September.
Do we all agree?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
I do apologise, councillor.
It's just that I've looked at 5.3, and all of these things were brought to this committee by myself and my colleague Louise, and I don't think we've made any progress on any of them. I mean, there was the request for a green project. We didn't have any progress on that, just that they're going to do a tree strategy. Well, that's that tiny little bit. All sorts of things on here. It just feels as if we didn't actually, you know, personally achieve anything. And that really saddens me, disappoints me.
Thank you, Councillor.
So helps. Jonathan.
Nobody's actually approaching me about the green project per se. Yes, we have talked about tree strategy and we are working on that at the moment.
You were actually at the meeting. It was August 2.5 years ago, I think.
No,
or 2 years ago.
We can certainly look into that. I am pleased to say that obviously we do have one small green project, which will be a local nature reserve, will be kick-started shortly. That's 40 plus acres. That's been through Cabinet. That goes to full council in September, I think. I will have to check the date. So there is quite a lot. If there's anything specific that you want to work on, then obviously if you let me know, drop me an email, I'm more than happy to work with you. And just certainly if there's something we can do, I would like to work with you to get that done.
Thank you.
Robert.
Yeah, if I could just maybe elaborate on what my cabinet members said. We're declaring a local nature reserve for the land along Fairway, opposite by the Kingston Centre. And as a part of making that a local nature reserve, plans are now in place to plant a lot of trees on that area as well. I think we're not talking hundreds, we're probably talking about thousands of trees, but we've got to wait, obviously, for a time when we can get volunteers post pandemic to be able to plant those trees with us, because if the community are involved in planting, just like you've got at Demington, then the community will look after and support it going forward. So it's important to get that community use. Additionally, the Bunns at Homecroft have been very successful for a greening project with wildflowers. And again, if you've been into Victoria Park, we've had a project in there along South Street
where we planted a wildflower meadow all along South Street, and at the moment the colours on there are absolutely fantastic. Additionally, we are supporting a group within the Bassage area to look at a play park with a greening agenda there, and I have been again talking to you, Chairman, about the possibilities what we might do with one of the play areas in your area. So there are plans, we have done things, there are plans afoot. Unfortunately, COVID has knocked us back because we've had to go into response mode, and it's trying to get the community involved in these projects, and it's hard if people are in lockdown. We can't encourage people to come out, but hopefully as things get better, you will see more and more green projects.
And it's worth mentioning as well, I mean, staff at crematorium, I don't know if anybody's been up there. I mean, we did have a wild flower meadow and some other flower beds up there as well. We do have to sometimes cut those back, but they looked absolutely fantastic a couple of weeks ago when I went and visited the site.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Councillor Edna. Thank you very much, Chairman. Yes, I agree with what Councillor Price said about the crematorium. It's I call the place beautiful. I mean, it's not the right word really, but it is a beautiful area. Councillor Hobbs, you talked about a green project and that. I've been in a situation where I've had people ringing me up. Can we leave a roundabout so we can, we'll cut the roundabout and we'll leave the edges so we can put all our flowers and everything on it? And it's working perfectly well at the moment. I pick up the suicide prevention on there, and can I just say to you, there's an awful, awful lot of work going on at the county to do with suicide prevention. It's one of the team working on it, and we've got a mental health strategy coming out probably in the not too distant future. And then you mentioned assistance with council tax arrears. I know myself as a councillor, I've had a few people actually with council tax arrears. You've only got to make a phone call to Rob Wolfe and that and get things sorted out for the people. And
it's not a thing. I know, I have worked with Rob.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's work we have to do ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Councillor Lennington.
Yeah, just going back to the environment portfolio and green agenda. I think sometimes you get too hung up on having a green project. And I'd like, if possible, sorry, I've been harvesting for the last 2 days. I wonder if it was possible to have an agenda item which gave us a little bit of an audit of what's happening around Stafford Borough, including Stone, obviously, at the moment. We've got within our division a poultry enterprise that's gone up, and there's something like 10,000 trees, 20,000 trees there. And a lot of people are now thinking about what they can do for the environment. And then, of course, we've got the farms and the new environmental land management system that's coming into place next year. And I think that we could be a forward-thinking borough, putting all of that together and actually doing a little bit of an audit and saying, look what we've done, as in Stafford Borough, not Stafford Borough, but Stafford Council, everyone.
Thank you.
I've been told, so I believe it's going to resources group, but did you want to say a few words on that, please? Please. Thank you.
Yes, through you, Chair. So we approved our climate change and green recovery strategy in November at Council last year, and since then we have appointed a full-time post for climate change. She's located in my team, and we've been working really hard to formulate a delivery plan for year one delivery, and also working in partnership with Keele University and the Centre for Alternative Technology. So because of our climate change declaration is focused around reducing emissions from our own activities, there's obviously a potential financial implication to that, so it was decided that progress report for climate change would go to resources scrutiny at this moment in time. So the progress will be reported through that, although we recognise that there are a huge amount of cross-cutting issues across all of the scrutinies. So the work that's undertaken in development around the local plan, that will be reported through economic development scrutiny, that will carry on. We'll carry on receiving the reports that we do through community, and resources will pick up the bulk of it.
I'll go to Mark and then I'll continue with Jonathan.
Yeah, just very quickly, I just wonder whether Jonathan and Jeremy would like to take that back to Cabinet and see if there's some sort of a golden thread that could be sort of knitted together around climate change, because as Tracy just said, it affects all of us.
Through you, Chair. So I'm the strategic lead for climate change, so I will take that back. I will work with my Cabinet colleagues and take that back.
Thank you. Jonathan?
Just on the point that Tracy raised as well, there are a number of things that we need to do, and it's not just us that need to make sure that we tick all the boxes as far as our own carbon audit and looking at the work and the carbon that we generate within this authority, but it's also about our partners as well, and they need to make sure that they either catch up with us or we try and encourage them to do best practice. Some of the things that we need to do to deliver to achieve climate change, and I know we set a date to 2040, and that is deliberate because a lot of this takes time. If I set a date for 2030 and we don't hit that target, I am the first person that will be pointed out for not delivering. I do believe we will achieve 2040, if not sooner, but it is a realistic date, and we are looking at other authorities such as the County Council where they have 2050 date. And they've got even more challenges than we have, and incidentally, their carbon footprint in Staffordshire is substantially higher than ours, which is why some of these pressure groups that look at the borough and what we do don't challenge anybody else, which I find very interesting. But the point is that to deliver some of these things, there is a financial cost to it, and to become carbon neutral and to do some of the things that we need to do as an authority is going to cost us money. And that is why, as Tracy has alluded to, that it's got to go to resources, because my financial portfolio needs butchering up to give us some money in order for us to be able to deliver some of the things that Tracy, myself and the team really want to make sure that we get done. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I'll come to you second. I'll just point out that we, through Stoke Town Council, have a single plastics group use, and we were lucky enough to have Jonathan, Robert and Becky Martin come to talk to us, and it was a fascinating meeting, and I would advise all of you to try and get some kind of meeting. I know we all think we're clued up, but Becky Martin put forward something that I hadn't stopped thinking about, and that was that it's okay talking about getting you rid of single-use plastics, but some plastics are essential. You know, the likes of a water bottle that we're going to fill up day after day after day after day. And it really was quite thought-provoking, and I thank you for that meeting that you came and gave to us yesterday.
I have to say I came away from that meeting with more questions myself. I thought the challenge was excellent, and it was a really, really good constructive meeting. And Becky is excellent anyway, the presentation she put on. I mean, I don't know if that's something that perhaps this group would like us to give a presentation on in the future, and whether the members would potentially find that useful, but more than happy to do that.
Yeah.
We do an awful lot more behind the scenes at this borough, particularly around climate change, than people realise. You know, a lot of our residents think that we sit on our laurels and don't work, but actually we are doing a huge amount. And despite COVID, Tracy and the team have managed to succeed in doing an awful lot of work in very challenging times. So, all kudos to you, Tracy.
Yeah, and I think the work that's being done through the schools, you know, that to me, that they're our future, they're our answer. These youngsters, they're so clued up. You know, I've got a 6-year-old that lives with me, and even he, you know, if I use the wrong thing, granny, to voice behind me, you know, they're so eager, and you know, hopefully we can instill in them the values that we want and that we need, and that they'll be really proud of us that we reached a carbon neutral environment.
But we just missed the ones who did McDonald's and pizzas
and the Essex Bridge.
Okay, Andrew, can we move on to the
the final, which I think is page 34.
Certainly, Chairman, yeah, the committee's work programme is laid out in the appendix from page 36. The next meeting is due to be held on the 21st of September, and the items are listed there for the members to see comments and add on if they wish.
Thank you. Before we close the meeting, thank you, Andrew. Before we close the meeting, thank you to all the officers that have attended this evening, and to everyone who's come to the meeting. Does anyone want to have a final say before I close the meeting? Yes, ma'am, certainly.
Can I just ask one question, actually? And that is probably to Tracy or Anna. Do you have a good working relationship with Housing Plus?
Yes.